From the Art Center in Carrboro, you're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning and thanks for joining us wherever you're listening from. You're in for a treat today. I'm going to continue my interview with Rocco and his career on radio and all the legends in the arts that he's met, and we'll get to listen to their music as well. But first, I'm going to have historian Bob Crowley, my friend who's in the studio here with me.
Good morning.
And also Will Williams, who's leaning over Rocco's shoulders. And I'm going to open up with a monologue written by Bob Crowley, a veteran of foreign wars, I would say,
yep.
Definitely Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that really sort of got through to me, and that I asked him to print out for me so I could deliver it this morning as a monologue, and then what we're going to do is we're going to pick up on conversation right after that. I give you the cult of the veteran. Supporting the troops has become a catchphrase and a cause throughout American society in this year of 2015. Many people go about parroting "thank you for your service" to anyone in a military uniform and treating anyone having served in any wars as if they're saints. I served in Vietnam, in combat in the Mekong Delta area. I saw my buddies die, one actually in my arms. I watched as two of my friends from high school fled to Canada to avoid the draft and suffered the castigations of my peers when I accepted my own draft notice, ordering me to serve. Then I endured everything from bland indifference to vehement hostility for having done that. However, somehow, now, I am a hero to many of the same people having expressed all but hatred 40-odd years ago. None of this is sour grapes in any way. I understand the mindset of those times, and while I may not like it, it was a true expression of the feelings rampant at the time. We must accept those parts of life we cannot change, as long as we have made an honest effort to make changes. In the spirit of doing that, let us explore this current cult of the veteran. Defining veteran. The dictionary defines a veteran as one having fought in a war. The first recorded use of the word in English dates back to 1509 AD. The word is derived from the Latin word veteranus, meaning of long experience. From the Latin vetus, meaning old, French uses the term ancient combatant for veteran. Support our troops. When did supporting our troops become synonymous with supporting a war? Despite all the military posturing, no sane soldier, sailor, or flyer really wants to be in a war. In case some civilian has not noticed, war is dangerous. A person could get killed in a war. That being the case, how is supporting any war a way of supporting our troops? Frankly, the best way to support our troops is to end the war, get them out of harm's way, and bring them home to their families. Being at war. Why do nations go to war? Writers like Karl von Clausewitz and Emperor Frederick the Great understood war was an extension of diplomacy. When nations disagree, the proper course of action is, or at least should be, to negotiate the disagreement in an increasingly vehement manner until one side or the other capitulates. That may happen at the first request for redress between those nations, or it may escalate to an all-out shooting war. Regardless of the means of settlement, the process from polite discussion to impolite war is the essence of diplomacy. God on our side. Assuming one believes in the traditional concept of a supreme being, does this God actually take sides? A relatively universal part of belief in a deity suggests we are all God's children. Then does God like some of the other children better than others? A wonderful line from a song by Bob Dylan says, "If God's on our side, he'll stop the next war." Thank you for your service. Whenever someone hears, "I served in the military during wartime," their immediate knee-jerk response is, "Thank you for your service." I then smile and nod politely so as not to be thought insulting, while inside I'm thinking, thanking me 40-odd years after that service is nice, but does not change the fact that our parents, or your parents, spat at me and called me a baby killer. I appreciate the respect I am getting at last, but in a very real way, it is too little and much too late. Singers of country music seem to be especially attracted to veterans, as if they have some sort of privileged relationship. Do city folks not like veterans? We now criticize the U.S. Veterans Administration for somehow being inadequate in handling the needs of veterans, as political budget cuts reduce the ability of the VA to handle the increased workload imposed by our wars on Afghanistan, Cambodia, Grenada, Iraq, Israel, Korea, Kuwait, Libya, Panama, Somalia, Vietnam, and various other places around the world. This opened the way for a series of private veteran support groups like the Wounded Warrior Project, Paralyzed Veterans of America, and now even the Venerable American Legion to beg us to give each of them just a mere $19 a month to do their work. While these groups may do some wonderful things, I cannot help but wonder where that money goes and why they only show hints of what they do in their advertising. Every one of those groups advertises on television and radio, and that sort of advertising is not cheap. The only activities they show are parties, parades, and outings for veterans, with no hint of how and if they are actually providing counseling, education, employment, assistance, medical, psychological rehabilitation, or other care services for veterans. Additionally, none of these groups seem to be doing any outreach to bring veterans to their services. They only ask for money. Who runs these groups? What is the salary of their executive directors and other staff? Rather than simply sending money, we should be asking questions first. In summary, I support all veterans, regardless of their branch of service, nationality, or ideology. I support the veteran by advocating for their rights. I support the veteran by opposing war, except in the most extreme circumstances of direct national defense. I support the veteran by insisting their government supply the best material and care possible. I support the veteran by demanding respect for them in following their conscience. I support the veteran by insisting they be treated properly by political leaders worldwide. I support the veteran by decrying the hypocrisy of this cult of the veteran.
Thank you.
listening to 103.5 WCOM, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. WCOM is also heard online at WCOMFM.org. This is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. Claudio, I must tell you, being a veteran myself, that was a powerful reading that you delivered.
Thank you. I feel it's something that really needs to be said, and I thought Bob Crowley did a marvelous job writing that.
I tried.
Coming from veterans, I just think it was something that moved me when I first read it, and I asked him for permission to perform it and express it today.
Yeah, I know not everybody's going to agree with it, but it's... It's the way I feel, and that's the way it is.
And the way I wanted to add one thing to that whole thing, you know, the both sides thinking that God is on their side. To me, and this is me speaking strictly for myself, I feel that war is the absence of God.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me.
And that's probably a good analogy for most folks, yeah. You know, being a devout agnostic, I share it completely.
Whatever your deity is.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob, how long did it take you to write that?
About 2 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah, that was one write through and two edits. You know, because there were things in there that needed to be shifted and changed.
And obviously it was a push of your conscience to come out with that.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been thinking about it for a long time, and it's just, you know, we're venerating the veterans, and I think, you know, as one and with Rocco, that's wonderful, but understand what you're doing. Understand what you mean. When you thank somebody for their service, do you know what they did? Just being in the Army is something you thank someone for? I don't know.
You might even want to ask.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they were the guy that massacred a village somewhere. You want to thank him for that?
Yeah, right. And you may also want to be aware of just... talking about the whole cult of the veteran and where you're sending your money to. You may want to be aware of these organizations that they're not just profiting by this money.
In all fairness, the organizations there do wonderful things. I know that the Wounded Warrior Project recently made a $5 million donation to cancer research. Wonderful. Say it. Put it in your commercial. Mm-hmm. How does somebody who might need the help, how do they contact you? That's not there. It's all just send money, send money, send money. Okay, I'll send money, but tell me who you are.
And also show me the individual care.
Absolutely.
Forget this sinking money into cancer and all that jazz. That's just a group of people experimenting.
That's
show
right.
me what you're doing for the regular guy.
Well, so far all they've done is parades and parties.
Well, you know, Bob and Claudio and Will, there's a different mindset today about the veteran compared to the 60s when we were in the service. And it's a different world today.
I agree, and it's fine, but I don't – just as a lot of the stuff in the 60s was mindless, a lot of this is too.
When we were kids growing up in the 40s and the 50s, there was a different mindset after World War II after the Korean War.
Absolutely.
And things are just so volatile that you don't know which way the country is going to go and think, who knows what is going to be the case in another 10 or 15 years from now.
It's almost like our politicians see themselves as two separate football teams. They're assured of the audience, so they're not worried about taking care of the people because we're just going to come to the stadium and watch the game because they're both as pretty much as pathetic as two losing teams.
Okay, don't get me started on that.
Never mind. What day is today? You keep up with all that history
absolutely.
Stuff, so give us a dose of something else here.
Let's see, it's the 3rd of March, the day after my birthday.
Hint, hint.
Yeah, it's if you lived in Japan, it is Peach Blossom Day, and this is a celebration of women and girls because in Japan a wonderful term of endearment is to call someone my little peach blossom.
And to all you peach blossoms out there, I just want to let you know we at the Speakeasy have a crush on you.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it is also, in the United States, National Anthem Day. It's although the original poem for the anthem was written in 1814, it was not officially adopted until March 3rd, 1931, when it was signed into law as the national anthem by Herbert Hoover.
Took him a while, huh?
Took him a while, but that's when it was. So... you know, it now is a pretty good song, I think, even though it is written based on a British drinking song.
Well, I can appreciate that
part. Well, I mean, actually, I feel that's appropriate.
Right.
So, anyway, you want some news. I just saw a few interesting things. They were digging a foundation for a brand new supermarket, a Monoprix, over there in Paris, and came upon a mass grave of 200 victims of the bubonic plague.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so, I mean, the plague germs and stuff were basically dead.
I would like to think they're gone by now. Yeah,
but it's a treasure trove for people who want to study the DNA and everything else there. The Charlotte City Council yesterday, they rejected a new ordinance by a vote of 6-5. The ordinance would have prohibited discrimination against lesbian, gay, transsexual, all this stuff, and whatever. So now if you go to Charlotte, you can discriminate all you want because there's no ordinance against it. So
that's
thank you, Charlotte.
That's pretty pathetic. Yeah.
Well, you know. And last year in Leicester in England, they discovered the grave of King Richard III. It's been lost for 500-600 years.
In some parking lot, right? A parking garage.
Yeah, it was a parking garage. And when they're digging around it now, they've found a coffin of a woman not too far away, a very high-born woman, very well-nourished, buried in a lead coffin that was placed inside of a limestone coffin. So the speculation is now, who was she? Did she give a lot of money to the priory? Was she the founder? Or maybe it was Queen Anne Neville, who was Richard's consort. So we're trying to figure out who she is here. Let's see here. And then, of course, we have the great story of the Clinton portrait. Bill Clinton's official portrait. The artist was looking, I'm sure, for some publicity. And if you ever saw the portrait, Bill is standing in front of a fireplace in a very odd, non-presidential appearance. And ahead of him, there's a shadow on the fireplace. And the artist says, well, that was supposed to be Monica.
We should remember everything in your records.
Yeah, so, you know, Bill and Hillary always say, well, we never liked that picture, and that's fine. But then she's in trouble for email because when she first became Secretary of State, they didn't issue her a government email address at first, so she used her own, and that's illegal. So all kinds of fun stuff.
My problem with both her and the Republicans, that's Democrats and Republicans, is they both want that office way too much. I think it's a power trip, and we don't need that kind of stuff in office.
Oh, absolutely. So let's see. We were talking a while back about poetry, and I think maybe it's time that we did a little poetry slam off.
Well, let's give him a little farewell so we can go on to Rocco's life. We'll do a little poetic conclusion to this whole scenario.
And I think that I'd like to do my favorite poem for this time of year. We've been snowed on and frozen and whatever. And the poem comes from the great poet Ogden Nash. And it's called Here We Go Quietly Nuts in May. Do you hanker for April showers or a rarefied day in June? Well, send me a grade A May Day and please deliver it soon. I weary of branches naked, creaking like lovelorn cats, the earth underfoot mud-caked, the sun overhead ersatz. Oh, send me a balmy zephyr to play me a rigadoon, and I'll gulp of my grade A mayday till my hiccups hammer the moon. So I always like that, and it's very appropriate for this time of year, so please send me the mayday soon.
And I'll deliver one that I wrote about. Actually, I was at a friend's house in Philadelphia, and looking out of his bay window, the wind was 15 below zero. This was moons ago. My friend was Miles Martell, an author. And I was just so taken by the movement of the oaks in this tumultuous wind outside that I wrote a piece that expresses my love for trees. It's called Skeletal Repose. The swaying, rhythmic, restless stride of winter branches thin and wide. So skeletal in their repose as windward motions they expose. Like arms that reach beyond man's prayers where distant realms greet distant stares. And yet, beyond allure defined, they reach within the soul, the mind. To all that speaks of God to me, when I gaze long upon a tree. Thank you.
Chapel Hill Carrboro Community Radio. This is WCOM.
And I just, this is Bob Crowley again. I wanted to give a little bit of a shameless plug for us as one of the sponsors here, the Apex Arts Council, because this year we are officially 10 years old on March 22nd, and we are going to throw a birthday party in Apex. The details will be on the website or on our Facebook page. There's an event on the Facebook page, and we're going to have a very special guest. Chef Claudio himself will be there and would have prepared some things for us. So, and we'll also have a birthday cake and whatever all else. So just want to say, if you want to meet Chef Claudio or just celebrate the Apex Arts Council, come on down.
Audio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, every Tuesday morning, 10 until 11 o'clock. WCOM, your voice in our community. This is Community Radio for Carrboro and Chapel Hill.
Just letting our listeners know, we have Bob Crowley in the studio, also Will Williams, and of course, at the helm, the one and only Rocco. And right after this music, I'm going into interviewing him continually until the end of the show about his life and career in radio and all the fine musicians, singers, songwriters that he's met. And that'll be the treat for the remainder of the day. So thank you for tuning us in.
Of science is endlessly fascinating, and some of the world's most significant science is going on right here in the Triangle. This is Ernie Hood. Join me Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Radio En Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, right here on WCOM LPFM.
And this is Claudio at the Speakeasy. Just want to let you folks know we're bringing Rocco and his life story back on, his life in music and his career on radio. We finished the last show with Satchmo, that being Louis Armstrong, and I think you told me we're going to start your interview on this show with Satchmo again.
Well, Claudio, as you know, Louis Armstrong is a legendary performer, musician, artist. He is just an American treasure, a superstar.
No doubt.
I was very, very fortunate enough to meet him either in 1963 or 4, or it might have been 64 or 65. I cannot remember the year.
I was still climbing trees in Africa.
But anyway, he was such a gentleman and such a nice man. He probably would have been about 65 years old. And at that time, I was probably 21 or 22, maybe somewhere in that age.
He just comes across as a gentleman when you look at his image, doesn't he?
He was such a nice man and very humble, generous. He wanted to buy the stage crew lunch because they came in a little early. Actually, it was a late afternoon, so to speak. And he just was so helpful and wanted to help put on his show. And what I was doing at that time, I was the light man for the show. Mm-hmm. And I was setting up spotlights and lights so that the audience would have a nice lighting show. And as a result, there were a number of times where you were just talking to the man. And I just felt so honored to be able to just meet him and talk to him. He had about a 7 or 8-piece band with him, and they were all terrific jazz musicians, the best of the best at that time, that was traveling around with him.
I'm sure it had to be extraordinary.
I never forgot the show. I worked many, many shows, either doing the sound, the lights. I was a young man. I was in college. I was working my way through, and any time I could be hired to do this, I would jump at it. And wound up working on I don't know how many shows. If you listen to my radio show on Saturday morning, I'll probably play 60 different instrumentals or songs from the late 30s to today.
And the name of his show is Music Hall, and it's on from 9 to noon.
Well, in the course of that show, normally half of the songs or instrumentals that I will play on the air, I either met those people or worked the concert when they were in the area I was in and was part of the production
That's
of the
good.
Concert. So I got a chance to meet a ton of people that became stars, were unknown at the time, and it just was a rich environment
no doubt.
For me. It really was.
Well, give us what you got from Satchmo.
I have a song by Louis Armstrong, one of my favorites, really. It's from a James Bond movie. And, well, you know, Louis Armstrong could play the trumpet so well and was an entertainer.
He'd make any movie look cool.
He was a comic on the stage. And this is something from a James Bond movie. Listen to this, fellas, and see what you think.
On the time in the world, time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the cares of the world far behind. We have all the time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only love. Only love.
listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater.
Just want to let you folks who are listening know that this is going to be an ongoing interview with Rocco. One or two shows just aren't enough for getting all this down. He's just got too many great stories to go with this music he's playing. So we're going to continue for as long as it takes, however many shows it takes, either full shows or partial shows. But the interviews will continue.
Claudio, I'd like to say something else about Louis Armstrong. We were talking about his voice, and I remember that afternoon when we were either backstage or in the dressing rooms, and we were talking to Louis Armstrong. And one of the people there said, they said, "Mr. Armstrong, how is it with the voice that you have, you're so popular? You can make these songs sound so good with this gravelly voice." And do you know what his response was? I never forgot it.
You got me curious.
He said that it isn't what your voice sounds like. It's what you do with your voice, no matter what it sounds
what
like.
What you emanate.
And think about that. How many people have different voices that they can make it work for them?
That's true.
Whether it's high, low, whatever, they can make their voice work for them for what they're doing.
And I would say in a quick observation that I've always seen Louis Armstrong as a wonderful host. You always got a sense of hospitality from the way he spoke or communicated.
Well, I believe he was an ambassador at large for a while for the State Department when he was touring places around the world, in Asia, Africa, Europe, South America. He went all over the world.
No wonder that side came out so much.
And he was just a gentleman. One other thing, as a musician, think about this one. You can hear Louis Armstrong play any number of things with that trumpet. And I don't think he ever hit a wrong note, ever. If he did, the note was the right note for that time.
He made it part of the flavor no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. He never hit a bad note in his life when he was playing the trumpet.
Yeah, well, that's the comment about his voice. I think any of you folks out there who think you can't sing, that's it. Do it.
Exactly. Hey, Bob Dylan made it. Come on.
And that's what Louis Armstrong was saying. It's what you do with your voice. And that could apply on the radio here.
Absolutely.
There's any number of people that really don't have a radio voice, but they have been very successful and very popular.
So if any of us, break into song, just step back.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should start a quartet just before.
Hey, give us. You were going to introduce us to something you know about John Denver that we don't know.
Well, this was a show I was working in 1962. It may have been 61. I'm not sure. Again, it was. You know, we're talking about 55 years ago.
I'm still in the trees. Go ahead.
There was a group that was pretty popular around called the Chad Mitchell Trio. And Chad Mitchell got together a little group, and they were pretty good. They were kind of copying the Kingston Trio, which at that time was over the top and had a number of hit records across the country. And the Kingston Trio were known already probably worldwide, certainly in Europe and all over the United States. Anyway, Chad Mitchell came out with his group, and he had a little group behind him. And they were performing in the eastern part of the state. I was doing the sound that night and working the microphones. Two or three of us, that's all. You didn't have 15 people to put a show on back then, and there were probably 800 to 1,000 people in the audience. Anyway, there's this fella backstage before the show practicing on his guitar, really hitting that guitar. He was really good. And he was young, and I went up to him, and I said to him, I said, "Boy, you can really play that guitar well." He had a six string with him. And he said, "Well, you know, I practice a lot." And he was one of the musicians backing up Chad Mitchell in the trio for the show. So I said, "Well, what's your name?" He said, "I'm John Denver." And I introduced myself, and I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "I'm from Colorado." And I said, "Well, it looks like you're going to do a good job on this guitar backing up the Chad Mitchell Trio here." And there were some other musicians also there. So anyway, they went on, and they put on a terrific show. 10 years later, here I hear about John Denver. Actually, I heard about him 5 or 6 years later when he was on his way up. But by the late 60s, he became a household name. And then by the mid-70s, he had his own television show on ABC Network, bringing in all of the superstars around the country. And back then, I don't think he knew how popular he was going to become. He wasn't married. He hadn't met his wife, Annie, with that song he wrote about her, Annie's
mm-hmm.
song.
Right.
And he was a young guy. He was maybe 19, and I was 19, about the same age. I wasn't even 19. I was 18, I think. And anyway, it was a treat to meet this fella. He was very humble, very nice, but a little bit insecure about his future.
Hmm.
And I don't think he ever knew what was going to happen to him later on down the
Most
road.
Most of us don't, but that's great. Rocco discovered
great
John
story.
Denver.
I didn't discover John Denver. I just got a chance to meet him when he was a musician, and no one ever knew anything about John Denver.
And so what do we have?
I have a piece of music. I'm going to play a couple of these John Denver songs,
right.
Two or three of them, because he had such range.
He did.
And a lot of folks don't realize that. And he was very talented, could play extremely well. And this is from one of his concerts, one of the best recording concerts that I believe he was in really good voice. And this is called the Wildlife Concert.
Hmm.
Of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. Left yesterday behind him, you might say he was born again. Might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road, hanging by a song. But the string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. Keeps changing fast, it don't last for long. Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softening a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High. He climbed Cathedral Mountain, saw silver clouds below, saw everything as far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once and tried to touch the sun, and he lost a friend but kept his memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side has turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Talk to God and listen to the casual reply. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High. Now his life is full of wonder, but his heart still knows some fear of a simple thing he cannot comprehend. Why they try to tear the mountains down to bring in a couple more. More people, more scars upon the land. And the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. I know he'd be a poor man if he never saw an eagle fly. High. It's the Colorado Rocky Mountain High. I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Friends around a campfire
Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High. $500'll buy you a stack. Bet it all on the red or the black, and you lose. Bet on the blues. You tell me you are a gambling man. Try to beat the house if you can. You lose. Bet on the blues. If you're looking to get an inside slant, if you're looking for something so good you can't refuse, bet on the blues. Find a man who thinks he's over the hump, and I'm here to tell you he's a kind of a chump you can use, bet on the blues. Lucky old sun is shining today. Even money says you'll be paying some dues. Bet on the blues. You say you found your lady fair. 8 to 5 says she's wearing her traveling shoes. Bet on the blues. A bet on the blues. Bet on the blues.
Yeah.
Bet on. $500'll buy you a stack. Bet it all on the red or the black, and you lose. Bet on the blues. If you're looking to get it. Jump right.
John Denver on Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. I'd like to tell you that your host Claudio is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts, performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and a master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. Back to Claudio.
I want to say that the thing that shows me is his diversity. I realize this was a performance, this was a tour, and you want to be as diverse as you can, but the song in the middle sounded like Chris Isaacs. The last one had sort of a Mike Cross flavor, and before then, of course, Rocky Mountain High, we all know that's his signature song.
One of his huge hits, and as I said, he had great range.
No doubt.
And was very, very
talented.
I did
not realize he could sound like Chris Isaacs, but tell us something about that guitar player.
That concert, the Wildlife concert, he had hired James Burton, who was Elvis Presley's lead guitar player for his entire career.
Wow.
So all of those Elvis Presley songs that you heard from the studio in the early days and then the movies and the shows in Las Vegas and on tour, James Burton was always there. And then, of course, when Elvis Presley died, James Burton had to find work. And
right.
John Denver hired him for this concert, I believe, in the 1990s.
The one thing that always fascinated me about John Denver was that he was a naturalist.
He was an environmentalist. He wanted
Absolutely.
To save the trees, the animals, the environment.
I'm that way, too.
This next artist that we were talking about is very, very popular. Still is, and was extremely popular. He was a top 10 hit producer back in the 1960s and 70s. You couldn't get away from Kenny Rogers. And he first had a group called Kenny Rogers in the First Edition. They came to the eastern part of the state, East Carolina University, Wright Auditorium. It was 1968, and I was working that show, doing the sound on that show. And I was backstage, and he was getting ready to go on, and there was a fellow back there I was talking to, didn't know anything about him. He was a little bit younger than me. At that time, I was probably, 25 years old, 24, something like that. This fellow was 21, maybe 20, I don't know. But he was back there blowing up balloons and putting them together, and I was saying, are you going to open the show? He said, yeah, I opened for Kenny Rogers in the First Edition. And they're on tour going around. And I said, well, what's your name? And he looked at me. He said, my name is Steve Martin. And I said, well, Steve, nice to meet you. And wound up never realizing at that time that Steve Martin was going to be 10 years later on Saturday Night Live as a superstar, making movies
wow.
later and the whole deal. And he would come out, he played the banjo and blew up balloons and had a little comedy routine.
Well, we're going to have to bring the show to a wrap very shortly, so keep tuning us in for the continuing interviews with Rocco here, but we're going to go ahead and go to that Kenny Rogers.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us. And he began to speak. He said, son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces for a taste of your whiskey. I'll give you some advice. So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
every gambler knows. But the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. 'Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep. And when he finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out a cigarette.
Well, like I said, folks, this is going to be an ongoing interview with Rocco. I want to give a quick plug to the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, my underwriter, as well as the Historic Apex Arts Council, a decade old now. Thank you for tuning us in, and keep us tuned in to listen to the further revelations of Rocco's career. Cheers.